The following programming is sponsored by 6 Feet Over Under Productions. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM and 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the world news in the world of sports. Jeff, I'm never going to be able to get to the intro not screwing it up.
Why? We're going to talk about all the world in the news of sports.
Appreciate you very much.
Yeah, but there's a reason you do it, because I would screw it up even more.
This is true. Right. Yes. So it's the lesser of two evils.
Exactly.
At least I got to the end before I dropped the ball. So as we screw up the intro to the show, we will go and have a better show. We're going to talk to Jonathan Mayo in a few minutes from MLB.com, MLBpipeline.com about...
Yes, people, we are going to talk about baseball, because we refuse to just accept that there is no baseball, and there in fact is baseball. It's just littler baseball.
Yeah, we'll talk about the not being baseball a little bit afterwards, I think. But I mean, the idea for us was, look, for years we did a minor league show, and we love the journey of these players, what they overcome, the struggles that they have, how they should be compensated better, all of those issues.
Where they're sleeping.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, you hear the stories of them sleeping on air mattresses, and it's like all of a sudden you're interested more than you were.
Playing doggy rodeo.
Yeah, like all these different things that you never heard of before. And so you hear that there's a lockout in baseball, and I get the anger. I'm right there with everybody. We'll get to that after, but it's not all of baseball. It's Major League Baseball.
And it's only players that are on the 40-man roster.
And
so like, you know, the guys that we're excited about coming up and making the majors in this season and the upcoming seasons, like Bryson Stott and Mick Abel, they're all playing right now. Like, they're all getting ready for a season, and as the Jersey Shore Blue Coats, which is the single-A team for the Phillies, who we've covered for so long, as they said, hey, we're starting on time.
Yeah.
Get out here. So, you know, if you do love baseball, regardless of your anger towards Major League Baseball, there's a whole bunch of guys that you can go invest time in, cheer for, and then kind of watch them grow, which is kind of, you know, as you and I have always talked about, that's kind of my thing is seeing these guys when they're 18, 19 years old and kind of following their journeys until they make the major leagues.
It is fun. And you know, you're seeing the Phillies try to make over their system a little bit in terms of the top of the organization. You know, we're not going to ask Jonathan about that. We'll get to everything else. But what are your thoughts on where the Phillies organization is in the minors? They made a lot of changes moving into this year.
Well, it couldn't get worse, right? I mean, it was pretty bad. The whole thing was just kind of scrapped. They had no really good prospects until the last couple years. They've gone through the system and just kind of depleted themselves by bad drafting, bad scouting. There didn't seem to be a coaching philosophy that made sense. They did too much with the analytics, and I think the players pushed back all the way from the minors to Bryce Harper. And I think now they're getting back to kind of a balance, and I think that's important. And if we're right, the guys that they've drafted over the last couple of years are going to be the guys in 3 or 4 years that you're going to see as the guys that people are going to be wearing their jerseys.
You hope so. They need to get it right. I mean, they can't just buy. They're not a team that's going to buy World Series.
No, they're going to spend
a lot of money, but at the major league level, they're going to need young talent to either replenish the system or have his chips to make trades to sign guys.
Yeah, but look at the guys that, like, we've talked to when we did our minor league show. Logan Ohapi was a guy that, like, even when we interviewed him, we saw something in him, but, like, he wasn't a huge prospect. He's getting there.
No, I can't wait to ask Jonathan about that one. I definitely want to. Actually, why don't we bring him on and go to our interview with Jonathan, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
All right. The draft in the minors for MLB.com and MLBpipeline.com. Jonathan Mayo joins the show. Jonathan, looks like you're someplace beautiful with amazing weather, but it sounds like you're not enjoying an easy time on the beach at the moment as you try to get there.
No, I cannot complain. I saw baseball players doing baseball things today in Tigers minor league camp, so I have no complaints.
Yeah, so we wanted to have you on to talk about, look, we miss baseball. We want to talk positive baseball. And so you are actually doing what we are so jealous and wish we were doing right now, which is actually watching baseball. So what is it like to kind of be back to normal as far as seeing baseball being played in a stadium during spring training?
It's normal, but it's not. I think it's kind of like one of those superhero shows where there was a multiverse and the universe gets set back and it's not 100% the way it was before, but it's close.
So what's the atmosphere like there? I saw you were looking forward to seeing some prospects at the Phillies camp in Clearwater. What was it like to be there? Obviously, we're all dreaming about seeing that and hoping to see some of those prospects. What'd you say?
Well, I haven't been to Phillies camp yet.
Ah, I got you ahead.
A couple of days. I go there Sunday. I was in Yankees camp yesterday and Tigers camp today.
So
they had an intra-squad scrimmage today for Tigers camp. So it was fun just to see sort of competition.
When you talk about the competition right now, what's the thought among these teams with their young players? Is this an opportunity for them to really get themselves seen? People who want to see baseball can go see their product, which Jeff and I obviously enjoy, but they would certainly love more fans to come out at all levels.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because usually this stage of early camp, you'll have prospects in big league camp. But what's happening now, like in the Tigers intra-squad scrimmage, you had Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green, and then guys who are over from the Dominican Republic for the first time on the same field at the same time. So I think it's a real great opportunity for those younger level prospects to show how they can compete with the guys who are knocking on the big league door.
You know, in our covering of spring training in past, we've gone down and we've kind of seen that what you're talking about is these guys coming over from other countries, kids coming from high school and college, and all having to learn to assimilate and play together and in some cases learn languages and things like that. What is it like when you're there seeing how well organizations or sometimes don't deal with all of the integration that goes into what is now an international game?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that teams, I don't want to say across the board, but more teams spend more time helping guys, especially the young international kids, transition to not just playing professionally, but coming to a new country for the first time and the language barrier and things like that. And I think teams have come a long way in understanding that you can't let those kinds of things trip you up, because those are the kinds of things that keep you from maximizing your tools on the field.
As you head towards Phillies camp in a few days, who are you looking out for to see there that we should be looking out for here?
Who excites you?
Well, I think the guy who's going to get there first is Bryson Stott. And, I saw him in the Arizona Fall League coming off a huge year last year where he reached AAA. I don't think there's much more for him to do to be ready for Philadelphia. And he's the kind of guy that if you saw him one day, he might not wow you, jump off the page, but he does everything well. He can play shortstop, no doubt, but he also showed that he can slide to third or second, and he can really hit. And I think there's going to be more power once he gets to the big leagues than he's shown so far. It's starting to come. He was really impressive in the fall league. So that's the guy that comes to mind as he's going to be there first among their top level of prospects.
I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to Bryson. We've had a chance to talk to him previously. And one of the things that impressed me was also his baseball IQ and also his presence. Like even as a young kid first coming into the minor leagues, he seemed like he knew he belonged.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's certain guys get tabbed as advanced college players who should move quickly, and that's usually talking about their tools on the field. Whether they can hit, whether they take walks, and he has all of that. But he also carries himself like a professional and seems to have an innate understanding of what he needed to do in order to get ready for the highest level. I think another guy who fits that also is Logan Ohapi, who obviously was not as ballyhooed a prospect because Stott was a first rounder, but that guy carries himself like he knows he's going to belong in the big leagues.
Is he somebody that, so the guy that everybody's been talking to the last few, talking about the last few years in the Philly system has actually been Rafael Marchand. And it seems like Logan Ohapi's getting to the point where he may pass him as far as having more tools as a major league catcher, maybe even slotting in behind our current all-star catcher as somebody who could take that mantle in a few years.
I think he's passed Marchand by, to be honest with you. And this is taking nothing away from Marchand, who I think has a chance to be a good big league catcher. So the thing about Logan Ohapi that is so impressive isn't just the tools. Yes, he can hit. He's going to have power. He can catch and throw, but it's all the intangibles you want from a catcher. You know, he works with pitchers as well. The guys in the fall league, guys not from this organization, raved about how much he cared about their success. He's the first guy to show up. He's the last guy to leave. I am a firm believer, and granted it was a small sample that I saw in the fall league, that he is going to be an everyday big league catcher.
Look, and that's exciting because then it creates options to move Marchand for talent that you need in other places for a farm system that's still trying to rebuild. You talk about a bat. Somebody it looks like you're looking forward to seeing there is Johan Rojas. Tell us about him a little bit.
He's exciting. You know, and he's a little further away, but the fact that he's got such an advanced idea at the plate for a guy that young, I think bodes well. When you combine that with close to top of the scale speed, Gold Glove caliber defense in center field, you'll have to see how much the power is going to come. I think it's going to come. He's a guy that gets asked about a lot when teams call the Phillies about trades. And, you know, he's not quite at that untouchable standpoint, but this is a guy who has all the tools in the toolbox. And it's just a question of how much they get sharpened as he moves up the ladder.
So now let's switch to the arms. The Phillies the last couple of years have drafted two pretty good arms, Mick Abel and Andrew Painter. What are you looking to see from them? I mean, to me, Mick Abel seemed to have so much upside, but at least last year seemed to be struggling with command.
He did, which was surprising, because one of the things that really stood about him, and frankly about Andrew Painter also, is the size and the stuff with the feel for pitching. And I think what happened with Abel is because he scuffled a little bit, I think he started to try to do a little too much. And I've seen it, I think we've all seen it, with young pitchers. Like, he just needs to trust that his stuff is going to work. He does not have to put a ball in the dime because his stuff is so good. So I think for him, he's just looking for a level of consistency. And I think if he goes out and takes the ball every fifth day and just goes out and trusts his stuff, the command is going to come. The stuff is plenty good enough. The positive is that stuff didn't really back up last year. It's pure stuff. It's just the execution.
Anybody else we should be thinking about or that you're looking forward to seeing while you're there that we didn't bring up before we move on to other things?
Well, I'll talk about Painter, you know, in a little more detail. For him, it's just to see him get going. And, you know, I think it'll be good that Abel is there to kind of show him this is what it's going to be like. Because I think there are a lot of similarities between the two of them. And I wouldn't be surprised if Painter ends up being, a top 100, top right-handed pitching prospect after this first full season. I think he's going to hit the ground running. So I'm excited to see him.
We've sort of seen the minor leagues as the laboratory for experimentation on rules changes in the last few years. Anything we should be looking out for this year or anything from last year that was liked, that continued, or disliked, that went away?
I'm glad that they're experimenting with things. I think it's unfortunate with the automatic ball strike, the robo-ump, for lack of a word, that was only at some levels and not others. Because I think that was confusing for a lot of hitters where they might have it in one ballpark but not in another even. Or they get promoted a level and they have to readjust to human umpires.
I actually think eventually an automated ball strike system could be a good thing for baseball. But right now, because there are so many kinks that need to be ironed out, and the inconsistency among levels and ballparks made it a little tough. And frankly, tough to evaluate how players were doing.
So Jonathan, one of the other reasons we wanted to have you on, and before we let you go, we are going to ask you about our guys who we wish were in the Hall of Fame. But before we get there, we wanted to talk about, you know, we always talk to players, coaches, sports personalities about how they're using your platform. And you're doing something interesting for a good cause with a favorite of ours, Ron Darling. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
Sure. And listen, there are really important good causes out there. This is a cause that's dear to my heart because my son plays at a small Division III school. And in normal times, these smaller programs have to fundraise to do the things that the larger programs just have the money to do. And annually, Albertus Magnus College, it's a small school in New Haven, they go to Myrtle Beach every year because, just like it is in Philadelphia, it's too cold to play baseball in Connecticut right now. But because of the pandemic, they weren't able to have their normal fundraisers in the fall. And it's just been, like, my son is a junior in college and has not thrown a pitch since really his senior year of high school because the shutdown, he got COVID. So this is just doing something to try to let these kids have a normal spring season. And so we set up this fundraiser. It's a Zoom conversation. It's myself and Ron Darling, who was kind enough to volunteer his time and expertise. I thought the New Haven link, because he went to Yale, would be a good one. So we're doing this on Monday, March 7th at 7 p.m. And it's a $50 donation, and you'll get the Zoom link, and you can listen in and participate.
Yeah, if you want to get Ron going, we found that talking to him about the lack of innings that pitchers pitch now and not doing complete games, especially from a guy who I believe pitched into extra innings, a no-hitter, and then lost it. It's always amazing to talk to the old-school pitchers about, you know, when they didn't have all of the technology that they have now to make you stronger, faster, throw harder, that somehow these guys were able to hold up the way that people like Ron Darling did for so many years.
It's a different game for sure. Making note of that, I'll be sure to ask him.
Oh, he'll like that. And so will you. Don't you worry.
So we have here the Hall of Fame ballot just took place recently, and we have this debate going. I don't know what you think about Chase Utley, Ryan Howard. I think they're kind of fence guys that don't get in. But Jimmy Rollins is always the one that comes up as a guy that, if you look at his career, especially in the era that he played in, do you think he's a guy that belongs in the Hall of Fame?
You know, it's interesting, guys, because thinking about this, because you told me you were going to talk about it, and I, full disclosure, I do not have a Hall of Fame vote. My gut said Chase Utley was the one of the three who felt more like a Hall of Famer. But this was without looking at numbers or career comparisons or anything like that.
So it's interesting because in terms of the heart of the team, it was Utley. But in terms of sort of the player that transformed the position here, it seemed more Rollins. So I wonder whether he gets more credit. But I always tell Jeff, the guy who I had to turn the TV on every time he came up was Ryan Howard. And I know that he didn't play long enough to get that, but he was must-see TV every time he stepped up to the plate to blast something over the center field wall.
Oh, without question, there are guys like that throughout baseball. Listen, I grew up in northern New Jersey, and I was a Mets fan, and you had to watch every Darryl Strawberry at bat. That doesn't make him a Hall of Famer. And I think with Ryan Howard, the combination of the fact that he didn't necessarily do it for long enough, and that's a tough position because you tend to say, well, was he the best at his position at the time he played for an extended period of time?
And I think for a little stretch of time, maybe the answer was yes, but probably not quite long enough.
All right. So before we let you go, since you brought up that you were grew up as a Mets fan during that era, how much did you like, I'm assuming you saw it, Once Upon a Time in Queens?
I have not seen it.
Oh, you need to.
So we have had
Nick, yes. No, I know.
We have had the director of that on to talk about the stories, the behind the scenes, and then we had Ed Hearn on, who was the backup catcher, to talk about it. And there is nothing that is more fascinating than that. For anybody listening,
I was not a Mets fan, and I was highly entertained by that and the way that they presented the team and the things that you learned. But whether you were a Mets fan who knew all about the Mets or just a baseball fan who didn't follow them, the things that you learned about that team were fascinating.
Yeah. And
it is on my nightstand book.
Yeah. The one thing that I'll tell you is like, you know, as growing up in that era as well, and also being a fan of those teams, is you always wondered, how did they not win more World Series? And when we talked to Ed Hearn, his comment was, it was amazing that we won one World Series with the amount of dysfunction that was going on that team.
Yeah, I believe it.
It was definitely a good time to talk to them. Look, Jonathan, we always appreciate the time. We will look for some updates from you on Twitter as you go to the Phillies camp in Clearwater in the coming days. We wish you the best of luck with the event, raising money. Good on you for using your platform for a cause. And you have a great day, man.
Yeah, and if people want, they can still RSVP. I pinned the tweet at Jonathan Mayo, and you can find the link there.
We'll go and we'll share that on our at the Heart of Sports social media accounts after the show so that people can go to register there as well. So thanks for that. Jeff, we just shared that on our social accounts so people can go and support the event. Look, we'll talk to baseball in a second, but can you imagine kids not being able to play ball for 2 years, trying to just get on the field?
Yeah, I mean, it hurts development, but it also watching how much this pandemic has taken a toll on youth. Like, it's hard on all of us. But kids, like all of these things, it's just so hard on them. And so extracurricular activities matter.
And so we wanted to do this because everybody's talking about the lockout, and we'll talk about the lockout for a few minutes here. Mm-hmm. But there is baseball. And
there's a lockout?
And look, I'm frustrated, all right? There are a lot of things you have to explain to your kids that you're, like, not ready for those conversations.
Yeah.
I didn't expect the when can I see the Philly fanatic from my 5-year-old.
Yeah, that's not the one most parents dread, just so you know. Like we're going to keep it rated G, but
like, this is the first year that he's looking forward to going to a baseball
game.
Why? Because we went last year.
No, was it for the baseball game or is it for like when kids are young?
Both.
It's for hot dogs and the fanatic.
No, he wasn't the hot dog.
And ice cream and a
helmet. He was the ice cream and the helmet, the fanatic.
Yeah, you can still do those things. You can go get a helmet.
And just being at the game, and we can't do that. And I do believe there will be baseball at some point this season.
Well, there'll be baseball on opening day. It just won't be in major league stadiums.
Did you see some of the, was it the Phillies that put out that it's okay because we weren't home for the opening series that were canceled?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So our opening day is still
there. It's not our problem, right?
Yeah. No, that's not how this works. So we are on day 93 of the lockout. We should be 27 days away from opening day. Instead, we've had the first 2 weeks canceled.
Wait, you didn't explain. So what is it? So is it the ice cream and a helmet that he misses most, or is it something else?
It's the fanatic. And you told me before the show that he can see him probably at the minor league stadiums because he's got time.
Well, also,
but I don't know which one he's going to be at.
Yeah, but he's also not on the 40-man roster, so it's okay.
But
he's available.
My 5-year-old doesn't get that.
He's not affected by the lockout.
I am glad that you understand the merits of the lockout and who is impacted. My 5-year-old still doesn't understand why it's okay to steal a base when we're not allowed to steal.
But this
is not a conversation that I can have with him.
But here's the deal. All you have to do is you can take him to the shore and you can see the Blue Claws, and I'll bet you he'll be there with Buster.
He'll have a blast.
It's sad that I know all these mascots. Or you could take them to Reading and they have a whole boatload of mascots.
He'll have a blast, but I know that you're the baseball guy. Like, this is your time.
We should not anymore.
Be celebrating our players in spring training, and instead we're finding different angles
to talk
about.
They ruined February 15th for me.
They did.
Yeah. And, but like, Valentine's Day, big day for most people. February 15th, big day for me. Like that's the day,
big
that
day for me.
That pitchers and catchers are supposed to report. And you get excited that spring is around the corner, despite the fact that the groundhog saw a shadow again.
So will you get excited when they say, like, pitchers and catchers are reporting in April or May?
No.
Like, is that like a... And so if, what's the damage here?
If they say pitchers and catchers report in April or May, you will see a letter from me to the Phillies saying, I want my money back. There's no way that I'm going to deal with, they're going to report.
What they're going to say is, you can get tickets the following season.
I know, my money's carried over for a whole bunch of years. It's not carrying over anymore.
They're going to tell you, you can carry that over very nicely.
Plus, apparently, according to you, I need to also go rob a bank, plus get the money back from anything else I'm going to do if I want to renew my Sixers tickets next year.
Look, depending on where you sit in that arena, there are 30% increases in tickets in the lower bowl. That's a significant
hike. That's a bargain, right?
And look, here's my thing.
What about the Flyers?
We'll get to them in a second, okay?
They
can't give
prices?
Away tickets right now. But... this is a team that hasn't made it past the second round to the Eastern Conference Final in 20 years. And you're raising tickets 30% in certain areas, but you're explaining it as, look, you know I spin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying, well, it's an average 14% increase. That's because the tickets higher up
That's
got
still
like,
a lot.
Like a couple percent increase. Exactly. Yeah. And the rationale is, well, we didn't raise it last year for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you didn't have the player you were playing for half the year and you charged everybody the full price. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know. The teams, there seems to be a disconnect. And it's not the only complaint I've heard about, you know, other teams down there, but there just seems to be a disconnect between the teams and the fans at some point. You look at the Flyers game last night, they had to hold back laughter to announce that there were 13,862 people in that building. They could have counted the people that were walking outside on Broad Street and Xfinity Live, and there weren't 13,000 people in the stadium complex.
You do realize this is the same team. They're not worried about PR being done right. This is the team a few weeks ago that didn't even acknowledge their founder's passing.
So the
Flyers are the gang that can't shoot straight, literally and figuratively. From the players all the way up to the front office. This is a disaster to watch. So if they raise ticket prices, then you know that Armageddon is here. Like that will be the day that hell freezes over, that somebody pays more
to
for
Flyers right
tickets.
Now.
Well, I could tell you, I know somebody very a close friend who has had, for as long as I've known him, has had season tickets. And I'm talking like first five row tickets. And he told me yesterday, I'm done. That's it. If anybody wants to take my tickets over before I say no, go ahead, but I'm done.
Look, I know that leagues think that people will just come back. There's a lot more entertainment options out there now for people to spend their dollars on.
Yeah, but this isn't entertainment. For the Flyers, you can't call it an entertainment option.
It's painful.
There's nothing entertaining about it. The first period against their rival Capitals, there wasn't even a Let's Go Flyers chant for the first period.
I went to the dentist on Monday or Tuesday.
That was better than a Flyers game?
And it was less painful than watching the Flyers game this week. Let's go to break. When we come back, we got Penn men's basketball coach Donnie.
Say that five times fast.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
You know, it's funny. I wish we could broadcast what goes on during the break, because we've got Wes behind the glass saying that he's been at the Flyers game the last two and he'll be at the one this weekend. And Jeff and I are going, why? And he goes, well, I had to work. That's the only reason that somebody goes to the Flyers game.
Yeah, and that doesn't make it much better, guys.
No, not at all.
You send me a photo.
I don't hear your mic, Jeff.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You said
talk to me?
Well, my mic was off. I'm convinced you have a little button over there to make sure that I can't talk.
But believe me, if I had a button, it would be used much more often on this show.
you sent me a photo of a Flyers stadium seating during a game where there was nobody there, and then you told me there were all those scouts there, and I'm like, where are they sitting?
There were a lot of scouts there last night. Apparently, they counted towards the 13,000.
There were 13,000 scouts looking at Claude Giroux.
There were scouts from Boston, Dallas, Anaheim, Colorado, Vancouver, Edmonton, Washington, Ottawa, Calgary, Vegas, Rangers, Seattle, and St.
Wouldn't
Louis.
It have been easier just to say the teams that weren't there?
Probably.
Well, you literally just went through the whole NHL.
Well, I just wanted to show how many scouts were there to take up that number that they released the people there.
And each one of them was counted as 1,000 patrons.
I know it's silly, but I'm like bothered by it. You know, like the Flyers were my team. Like I love all the sports, but I really love going to those hockey games.
Yeah, but where's your ratings discussion now? See, this is where you should be saying what the rate, whether the ratings are up or down, too.
I don't know what the ratings are.
Oh, see, look,
and now
I got
I'm
going
to have to look for it next week. And here's the thing.
Oh, no, that
I think
means
the
I'm going to hear it
different.
Week, huh?
I think the ratings are different at different parts of the game.
Yeah.
Like, if it were me, I would turn it off at the end of the game so I don't have to watch the collapse. Like, last night, they were up 4 different times in the game. And then in 25 seconds, they blew a lead and blew the game and have now lost 8 of 9 after losing 10 straight twice in the season. That is hard to do.
The last Flyers game I was at, I was with somebody who hadn't been to a Flyers game in at least 20 years. And I said, we don't have to stay till the end. Why? Why don't we have to stay till the end? Because here's what happens. The Flyers will keep it close in the first period. And then somewhere around the second period, they're going to have, there's going to be a little bit of hope. And then, you know, then it just all falls apart. So you don't really need to stay to watch that.
And then that's what happened.
That's exactly what happened.
Let's leave the hockey talk there. Let's talk about the hardwood. Bring on University of Pennsylvania men's basketball head coach Steve Donahue. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
We cannot complain. We always enjoy getting the chance to talk some basketball with you. A bit of a different season after the last couple years. Why don't you talk to us about what everything's been like for you guys this year?
You know, obviously, after not playing last year because of the pandemic, the Ivy League, and this year having such a new team, and honestly, it's been wild, but I'm just grateful that we're playing. We have had a ton of COVID. We took it out with it now, and just one of those seasons. But as I said, I think for the most part, college basketball has brought back some normalcy, and obviously March is such an exciting time of the year with the tournament right around the corner.
We obviously can't wait to watch the tournament. You mentioned some of the young guys, and your sophomore, Jordan Dingle, he's been lights out lately. And, I mean, for parts of the season, I'm not sure where he is after the last game. He's been leading the Ivy League in scoring. Can you talk about his development and how important that's been for you as a team?
Yeah, I think Jordan was Ivy League Rookie of the Year. He's one guy we leaned on early. We had such a difficult schedule, we probably leaned on him too much, but he's been fantastic. He's had 5 30-point games. He's efficient at all levels. He can finish at the rim, the mid-range, and he had 8 threes in the game. He's only a sophomore. In last game, unfortunately, he was in concussion protocol, so we didn't have him. We hope to have him back this weekend and then for the Ivy tournament next weekend.
So talking about the Ivy tournament, Coach, you're 9-4 in the Ivy. The regular season, as you said, has been kind of a grind, but you're third in the Ivy League and you're going to be in the tournament. How excited are you to be in a tournament with fans in the building?
Yeah, it's an incredible feeling for all of our guys, especially after missing the tournament the last 2 years. Listen, we play Saturday before selection. Sunday, you win a game, you're one game away from hearing your name. And that's what we all in the profession hope for, and as a kid, that's what we dream for. So we know we're going to play Yale in the first round, and then hopefully we're the winner of Princeton and Cornell.
Separate from the wins and losses there, how important is the pressure that comes with postseason tournaments to developing your young players like Jordan?
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime you get any kind of postseason experience, and in particular in our league, because not everyone makes the conference tournament, only the top four, to get that experience, even if this doesn't turn out to be successful. I think we're building something really special in our program. I think we can take a huge step over the next couple of years.
Coach, do you ever get tired of playing in the Palestra?
That's impossible, Doug. I came here as a kid. I played my last high school game here in Philadelphia Catholic League Championships. It's just a special building. To play in, to coach in, to be a spectator. It's so intimate that there's 10,000 of us on top of each other. There's really no other venue like it. And I argue maybe in all of sport because you're so close to the action. And it's just an incredible environment to play in, as I say.
Well, it's apparently a great place for breakfast, too, because Coaches vs. Cancer has their upcoming breakfast that's back in person. Can you talk to us about what that's like, where you guys are going to honor Dan Baker and what it's like when you get together on Monday, March 14th after Selection Sunday to talk to the fans?
Yeah, it's a great event. If anybody hasn't been there, you know, it's almost a bucket list. We have tables on the floor of the Palestra. All the coaches are there. We have all media there. And obviously this year honoring Dan Baker. But, you know, the excitement of, you know, knowing you got in the tournament and then you get to, you know, obviously Jay Wright's going to be there and talk about his team for sure. I hope others are there thinking about their opponents in the NCAA tournament. But what a special way to kick off the NCAA tournament on the floor of the Palestra with an incredible event benefiting Coaches vs. Cancer. And, as you said, honoring Dan Baker, the longtime PA announcer at the Vet, and obviously for the Eagles and Phillies over the last several years. And he's a cancer survivor, someone that we really love to honor.
You know, Coach, we've talked to you in the past about Coaches vs. Cancer and your involvement. What has it been like for you to become more and more involved in this and see the benefits of what the Coaches vs. Cancer program does, and especially what it does with the Philadelphia contingent?
Yeah, you know, I've been other places. I'm Philly, Delco born and all that, and I go other places. I spent a lot of time in Boston, and there's no other place like this. A lot of it with the success that the Coaches vs. Cancer has had over the last 25 years can be contributed to Phil Martelli and Frank Duffy, but more importantly, the Philadelphia community rallying around these events to help us raise money that, you know, I just had a friend find out his son had cancer, and prognosis is good because of events like this. We make an impact by raising this money for research, and it stays in our community, and it changes lives, and it'd be foolish not to use my platform to help this cause.
You know, you talk about the other coaches. Can you talk about the coaching community in this city? On April 9th, you guys will have the basketball gala at the Bellevue. You're going to have the City Six coaches who are doing this all honoring Philly coaching legend shot guy Herb McGee. It just seems like the coaching fraternity in this city is something special that isn't really replicated in other places.
Let me say that again. There really isn't a place that, first of all, they have six Division I's and numerous Division II's and III's, all in this really brotherhood of coaches. And all of us, Philly Six, Zach Spiker, Trexel, and Iron McKee, Temple, Austin Howard, it was Billy Lang, St. Joe's, and Jay Wright at Villanova, all spend a lot of time helping this cause and really try to make it the best it can. The gala is spectacular. The black tie affair at the Bellevue, and now we get to honor, you know, retiring at the age of 80, Naismith Hall of Famer Herb McGee, who we all know and love, and just another way to really have a great night to celebrate Philadelphia basketball and raise funds for an incredible cause.
You know, Coach, you mentioned before the role of Fran Dunphy and Phil Martelli. You see that Phil Martelli's kind of stepped into a role at Michigan because of what happened with Juwan Howard. What has impressed me about what Mr. Martelli is doing and the assistant coaches is how important assistant coaches are to a program. You always see that the head coach is the face of the program, but how important is it for somebody like you to have good assistants, to have people that can relate to the players and provide advice and see things that maybe you're not seeing because you're focused on something else?
Hey guys, this is not an overstatement. Your program survives how well your assistant coaches are in doing down. There's so much more that people don't see that really falls on the assistant coaches. These are 19 to 22-year-old young men that have, as you can imagine, life can be messy. And their abilities and how well they relate and how well they work and recruit and develop is all based on how good they are. Phil Martelli, to be an assistant coach at this point, is an incredible benefit for Michigan. And I hope people realize that assistant coaches are the lifeline of your program. And I think most head coaches realize that.
Yeah, I'd have preferred if they didn't have him as an assistant coach because he helped make sure they knocked off Rutgers and hurt my team's chances of making the tourney. Yeah. So I'd have preferred if they didn't have a strong assistant coach thing going on there. Coach, how exciting is this time of year for you in general? You know, regardless of how the season, you get to this point, you guys are a different team at this point. You've bonded. You have relationships. Can you talk about what it means to you as a coach? And I know you don't like to talk about yourself that much. To be in that battle with these guys who you've fought so hard with all year, to know that you're going to be in that Ivy League tournament playing Yale.
Yeah, it's hard to put in words the intrinsic feeling you get about the excitement of coming in and putting the group together. And for us, we were 3-10 at one point. We played an incredible schedule. But then, you know, all the things that you go through, and then the excitement of, you know, 24 hours of two games where you could be hearing your name called, where the whole nation, the whole world is watching. There's nothing like this excitement. Spring is in the air and everyone thinks of baseball. Well, college coaches think of just the thought of the possibility of playing in the NCAA tournament. And you know, it's incredible for someone like myself to like the opportunity and hopefully more opportunities, but for a player has that small window of 4 years. This is what they live for. And it's incredibly exciting. And as I said, it's like the final chapter of this story, this year, and all we went through. We like to finish it up strong and give these kids memories that they'll never forget.
You know, Coach, basketball may be what they live for these 4 years, but this is also an incredible period of growth for most people that age. And coaches are an integral part of that. I can't understate how much it means to this community to see the City Six coaches involved as much as they are in helping battle cancer and helping people in the community and using your platform for good. What does it mean to you to be able to give that example to the young men that you're coaching?
You know, I appreciate you saying that. I do think that's something that gets overlooked because everyone just kind of talks about wins and losses and who's on the hot seat and all that kind of stuff. And that's not how we live. We take our kids to the Hope Lodge once a semester because I want to expose our guys to like some of the things that are going on in life. And unfortunately, most are going to have to experience and get through and show real courage that these people are doing. And I think that's what goes understated in coaching. That's what kind of drives us is just helping these young people, making an impact. And they kind of say they're recruiting, it's funny, but I like to have two tables at your wedding, like Penn basketball. We're going to be there. and I just got an invitation from a kid who graduated 6 years ago from Penn, and he's invited me to his wedding. That means more than a Coach of the Year award. That's why we all do this. And that makes me feel so good that I have that kind of impact, and he valued our relationship so much. He wants me there on that kind of day that he saw for me.
You know, before we let you go, Coach, we just want to tell everybody you can get more info and tickets on the Coaches versus Cancer event at www.phillycvc.org, and we'll publicize that on our social media. Coach, you mentioned the Hope Lodge, though, and for we know about it. We are so impressed with what the city does with the Hope Lodge, but can you tell people who may not be familiar with it what the Hope Lodge does and how important it is to the city?
It is. It's an amazing place. It's up in Fox Chase. We have numerous ones around the country. But what it does is it provides families that are hit with this horrific notice that someone has cancer. And here the Hope Lodge is there to provide free housing. Because one of the biggest things that happens when someone has cancer, someone has to quit a job. You got to figure out the expenses. And the Hope Lodge takes something off their plate. We also get free rides to back and forth from treatment at one of the major hospitals here in the city. So people can come. They have a nice place to stay. They're with others who are going through the same thing. And it just takes the financial burden off these families. And I think it's one of the most amazing things that goes on in the American Cancer Society, that you're not alone. There's a lot of us here that are going to help fight and know that this is another way that we can help you get through this battle of cancer.
We appreciate you telling the listeners about Hope Lodge, helping make sure Hope Lodge can continue to thrive, and all that you and the other coaches do here in the city for Coaches Versus Cancer. Wish you the best of luck in the tournament there, and thanks for what you're doing with these men, developing them this season. We know it hasn't been an easy ride, but good to see you guys back out there in front of fans, and thanks for giving us a little time.
I appreciate you making time for us, and I hope everyone considers those two main events and love to have more people involved. It's an incredible way to get back to the community.
Well, we want to encourage people to go join you and see you there. You have a great one, Coach.
Thanks, guys.
Jeff, every time we have one of those coaches on, they talk about the game, but they talk about the development. And, you know, maybe it's because we ask these questions, but I think they enjoy the fact that we ask about them developing people, not just players, and the complete role that they play in their life. And you could hear him there when he said, I got an invitation to his wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know that you made an impact on somebody's life when they want you to be a part of that.
Not just an impact, a positive impact.
Yes.
And that's why, I mean, when we talk to somebody like Coach Donahue, he, you know, as somebody who's going to have kids that are recruited to play college basketball soon.
Please, I can't even sit on a chair right. I'm in the studio here. Yeah, I just knocked the chair down to make myself shorter.
So I was going to say something serious, but if people could actually see what was going on in the studio,
it would have been hilarious.
Is that all of a sudden you became about a foot shorter as your chair just like sunk to the ground.
And look, I'm not the tallest person in the studio to begin with, so being on a shrinking chair doesn't help me at all.
Yeah, but back to Coaches Versus Cancer. I mean, it's something that we take pride in every year and encourage everybody to be involved in. The coaches in this city do a great job. The American Cancer Society does an incredible job. And it's a fun event with a purpose. Like, what more could you ask? And it's right before the NCAA tournament.
I love this time of year. You know that my parents used to joke.
By the way, what time are you leaving? Are you going to be late for the Duke North Carolina last Krzyzewski game?
Man, I couldn't afford to go to that game I wanted
isn't
to.
That tonight?
I need you to buy me a ticket to that game.
Did you see the price of those tickets?
What are they up to now?
I think they were like $6,000.
Well, for $6,000, you pay like tuition and books for part of it.
I'm going to ask you a question. Picture your kid is in college right now and has... You know,
I would tell my kid to sell those tickets.
Hold on. Just let me finish. let me lay out this scenario. So you bought your kid season tickets for the basketball team. Probably cost $100 or $200 for the season. And your kid says, I'm going to the game tonight, and you find out that ticket's worth $6,000.
Sell. You'd be like, yo, you can get season tickets next year and a car to drive yourself to those games and a parking spot.
You could have something on the court named after you for that price, right?
It'll be Coach K in U Court. Like,
how loud is that play? I mean, it's a loud arena anyway. It's not just his last game. At home, it's his last game at home versus North Carolina.
Yeah, it's gonna be
like, they had to have set that up.
Would it be louder there or when Ben Simmons comes back here in Philly?
Oh no, it'll be louder here.
That's right, because it was pretty loud.
Because there's no Frosty involved down there.
It was pretty loud on Wednesday night down there for James Harden's debut on this team.
But it won't be loud because Ben Simmons is not playing next week. I'm not saying that is news. I'm saying that is a prediction because Ben, nobody's seen him play basketball.
His back hurts now. I am glad that we don't have to deal with
that.
I am so glad we don't. Okay, so I'm not even going to talk about it.
Why are you not going to talk about
it? Because I just... We wasted.
He's not
so
our
much
problem.
Time.
So
know.
Now's the time to talk about. Got it. Now you could laugh about the Nets.
Well, it's hilarious because the Nets are in eighth right now. They got Durant back on the court.
They're 500 this season. I think they're 32-32 now, right?
Yeah. Sixers are 38-23 though.
Yes. 17 and 13 at home. They're actually, after the Cavs beat the Bulls last night, mm-hmm. they're in second in the East now. The Cavs come into town tonight to play. Right.
That's going
to
be a good game.
It should be a fun game. Darius Garland is really good. Mm-hmm. He's been in and out with bat.
No, but
back
that whole
issue.
Team is it's a good up-and-coming team.
It should be
you
fun.
You don't think Cleveland, an up-and-coming basketball team, unless LeBron is there.
We obviously had lots of conversation leading up to the trade. I'll admit, hopefully I'm wrong. I thought they should
about
have made,
what? The answer is yes, you're wrong. But I don't know what
you
subject
just clip
are we talking
that
about.
And play it like right. anytime you want. I thought that they should have taken something less because I didn't think they would get Harden in the season, and I wasn't sure they would get it after the season.
Yeah.
We'll still see how his health is, but the spacing on the court and the fun watching this team a little bit, if some guys can knock down shots, they're a tough team.
So but here's my chance to say to you, you were right, but you're only right because of this trade. So you know that I like Maxey, but I've never been sold on Maxey, right? And I think Maxey has busted his butt to become a point guard, and he's succeeded in certain ways, and he would be an average point guard. He's a shooting guard.
He's much better at the wing.
And I had so many people texting me, not about Harden during the first and
Maxey.
Second game. It was like, when did Maxey learn to have a step back three? When did Maxey when did he catch and shoot? Where is this coming from? And that was his natural position, and we never got to see it because we had no point guards.
I just know you and Keith thought I was crazy for liking the guy so much.
No,
it's the only thing I'm right about every once in a while.
He's been going crazy. And the other thing is even though Tobias is struggling to catch and shoot, which he has to do, he can't keep. Harden apparently has been hard on him about this. But the other thing that kind of has been unleashed as a result of this is the athleticism of Matisse. That pass the other day, that full court pass to Matisse,
he's got
bolting
a better
down.
Better arm than Jalen Hurts does. Howie Roseman may try to sign him.
They may now have the best starting five in the NBA.
Okay, so
because of one guy, and I didn't think that was going to happen. And I just have one other question: how is it that James Harden, right when he's demanding trades or sulking his way out of town, looks like he's about 20 pounds overweight, and then the week after he gets there, he all of a sudden looks like he's fit as can be?
How does he do that? I don't want to overdo it because it's only three games, and I've told you all along that my concern is
yes, but it's a better three games than you could have asked for.
They're averaging, between the three of them,
more.
84.7 points a game.
The team is averaging 20 points more per game.
Yeah, they've got a combined 254 points on 56% shooting mm-hmm. right now. I mean, Maxey had his third straight 20-point game since Harden's arrival. He's averaging 24.6 points a game, shooting 64% from three. That's not going to happen again, but he was a 28-30% shooter from three in college. Maybe 35%, 34% last year. He's shooting over 40% this year from three. You want to talk about development.
Well, think about the looks he's getting now.
My favorite tweet, by the way, going back to the Ben shade, mm-hmm. was that Tyrese Maxey developed more in 1 hour than Ben Simmons did in 5 years. I did enjoy that shade that was thrown out there. And I did tell you, I finally found the bright side of the Markelle Fultz situation. Tyrese Maxey. That's how we got him. The draft pick that they traded Markelle Fultz for led to Tyrese Maxey.
Exactly the way they planned it.
Exactly
right?
How they thought out when they said, here's what we're going to do with the process.
Sometimes
we're
going to
draft this guy
it.
And he's going to fall off the abyss and we're going to trade him for a pick and get lucky that we
hit. And who made that pick? Was it Colangelo?
I think it was Elton Brand. I think Elton Brand did it. Oh, you mean the freaking GM who had Burnergate?
Joel Embiid apparently still hasn't let go.
I almost spit my water out when he said that in the post-game press conference.
You shouldn't do that.
Conference.
We're still in a pandemic.
It would have been bad. So they've got a tough schedule coming up next. Cavs, Heat, Bulls, and Nets. All but Miami here at home. The Cavs game tonight.
Yeah.
It should show you a little bit about what the team is. I mean, it's interesting. They've been doing this. Harden basically knows two plays on the team right now.
No, he knows more than that. I mean, look how he's distributing the ball.
Well, you say that in this three-game span for the Sixers.
Yeah. How many assists does he have?
37.
Yeah.
He's got 82 points, 37
so
assists, and 27 rebounds.
So how do you say he only
rebounds.
Knows three plays?
Do you know the only other player in Sixers history to do that?
Who?
Wilt.
Okay.
It's the only other player to have those types of numbers in terms of what he does. No, in terms of set plays that they're running. Like, he doesn't know the set plays in the offense.
No, but he's learning.
He knows a couple of them, but he's running more, you know, out there running. They're going to learn those plays that
he's
Doc
learning
runs.
On the job, and he's doing incredible. I mean, to be able to make that pass to Matisse when you haven't played with him before is incredible. The way that he's already, it's not just like everybody said, oh, him and Embiid. It's not just him and Embiid. That's what's so impressive to me. I did not expect is that he makes everyone on his team better.
Well, that he said to Maxey, apparently, who had 4 points in the first half the other night, you going to play tonight? And then he put up 21 points in the second half. Now, it's funny because I picture Jimmy Butler saying that to Ben and it not going the same way.
Oh, he would sulk.
So like, it goes to show you Tyrese likes to be coached hard and likes to be
motivated.
Well,
we've heard that before about him.
Before we let you go, you know my interest in gaming, right?
You're letting me go?
So, well, we have like a minute and a half. We can't sit on
the air
forever.
Oh, I thought you were giving us a pink slip.
I don't know what time we have to actually have to get off the air because we were like a couple seconds late whenever we want. We just had a fire drill on the way in. Oh, we'll just keep talking then.
The top of which hour?
Yeah, right? be clear. We'll just keep talking. So did you see that they're going to do a super betting broadcast?
No. No. Where there's stuff on the sides of the screen? I hate that.
The Bulls-Sixers game.
No. Is that just going to be on an alternate channel?
Will
like,
be
can I still
an
watch
alternate
regular?
Alternate live game sports betting experience for the Bulls-Sixers matchup.
I cannot stand all
they're
going to
have on-screen live odds, over-under, and moving lines, along with future odds and player
is
props.
Is this my end-of-show punishment for making fun of the fact that you didn't bring up ratings?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
I if I can't go ratings, I have to go gaming. So.
All right, well, do you have any final comments? Yeah, I'll just beat you to the punch
I
so
do
I don't
have final
to deal
comments.
With this.
So there is a chance that Rutgers could play themselves into the tournament this weekend. I don't know that they will.
Yeah.
But I have enjoyed watching Ron Harper kind of live up to what you thought he was, that you said he wasn't playing
yeah,
up
he wasn't.
To. I mean, he has been beyond clutch, and I just want to take a minute, because I never get to talk about Rutgers basketball on this show, Jeff.
It's okay. Now, you still don't get to talk about him.
Now, I need to do it this week, because by the time we come on the air next week, they may be eliminated from the Big Ten tournament and not in the in March Madness. So I'm going to do it right now.
Look at you. You're giddy.
Well, look, it's. I thought last year I was going, or was it 2 years ago? I don't even know anymore. I was going to get to see Rutgers in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I know. You didn't get to see
it. And I've told you, like, although my parents say that I always took days off from class,
right.
The first day of the NCAA tournament was a holiday for me.
Yeah.
I would not go to class. I would set up the couch.
Was that different than the second day of the NCAA tournament? Tell me how it was different.
No, I would go to class on the second day because I'd watch on my phone. But the first day, I wouldn't.
Had phones when you were in college?
Yeah, I'm not that old. Not when you were in college. We didn't have phones.
We didn't have laptops when I was in college. What are you kidding?
I think I had a BlackBerry or something like that when I was in college.
Well, you weren't watching on a BlackBerry.
No, I wasn't. But I was getting score updates.
Well, see, I just blew that out of the water. The case now has been made that you
So you think I skipped class on the second day, too?
So, yeah.
My parents just found out I didn't really go to school
And the
all.
Next week.
See, but they don't believe that I went to school even when there wasn't the tournament. So that's always their argument.
They still question if you went to Rutgers.
No, they know I went to Rutgers. I got a degree, barely. But they, you know, and they don't question it because I still cheer for Rutgers. And I wouldn't suffer that much if I didn't have deep roots.
And to go full circle, you cheer for, there are as many people cheering for Rutgers right now as people that were at the Flyers game the other night.
That's going to be it. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.